Welcome back to the Access to Education podcast, where we talk about all things having to do with learning disabilities and learning differences. There are so many ways to support children who are neurodiverse, and oftentimes I think we forget about supporting their gross and fine motor skills. So often we get stuck worrying about teaching them to count, to read, to write, and we then forget that the whole body matters. Today on the show, I'm excited to bring you Jennifer. She's a physiotherapist and a clinic owner of Kids Physio. Her clinics specialize in babies, kids, and teens, supporting children with distinct needs as well as typically developing children. Jennifer comes with a wealth of knowledge from her experience in private clinics, as well as working at Holland Bloorview Kids Rehabilitation Hospital here in Toronto. She's also a busy mom of three. Jennifer, welcome to the show. I'm so glad to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So I said it a bit in the intro. I honestly think that we forget that kids need more than just some kids, not all kids, but like some kids need more than just sort of the basics of reading and writing.
Well, there's a whole subset that's called physical literacy. And so we talk about, you know, literacy, obviously in terms of reading and writing and comprehending, but there's a term for it and it's called physical literacy. And the definition of physical literacy is the motivation, confidence, physical competence, knowledge, and understanding of your own body and how it engages in different physical activities that you need for the fundamentals of life. And whether that's, you know, learning how to roll, sit, crawl, and walk as a baby, and then carrying that through to running, jumping, skipping, hopping, stairs, navigating a busy classroom, that carries through all through life. And then also being able to apply that in a sports setting as well as we go through the physical demands of a child's life in terms of participation. So I think stemming back to the beginning of like the reading and writing, but there's that other branch of the physical literacy as well.
Before we get too deep into this conversation, can we sort of define what physiotherapy is?
Yeah.
Why a child, a person, an individual might require the support of a physiotherapist?
Absolutely. So, I mean, you as an adult sort of can think of physiotherapy like, oh, I sprained my ankle, I should go see a physio, right? So I have an injury, I should go see a physio. So it's very similar in terms of kids. I mean, physiotherapy by definition is a rehabilitation profession in the sense that we take something that you are either a skill that you should be able to do or a function of your muscle that it should be able to do, and maximizing the strength and potential of that skill. And so when we talk about kids and how that relates, we talk about motor development. And so acquiring the skills that we need to function in day-to-day life, but also any sort of injury rehabilitation. So our sort of mission statement, when we talk about, you know, my clinic specifically, Toronto Kids Physio, we are here to maximize a child's physical potential and help them 100% recover from injury. So that can mean the same way if you're an adult, you sprain your ankle and you need to go to physio. If a child sprains their ankle, then you should go to a physio. But when we talk about, you know, the other subset of kiddos that we see who need to maximize their physical potential, we talk about gross motor skills. We talk about gaining strength and how that relates to the rest of their motor development throughout their life. And that's sort of why we see physio for kids. And my sort of personal preference is that they do it in a way that's fun, right? So if you're a kiddo who sprains their ankle, you don't necessarily want to go to an adult clinic, and if you need to strengthen your arm, you're not going to necessarily do it through bicep curls. That's not really what you would get a five-year-old to do to strengthen their arm, right? So we do it in a way that's fun and engaging and feels really approachable for them.
So here's a question I have for you. I guess, what is the difference between doing occupational therapy and physiotherapy? Because I could see how people are listening and going, but that just sounds like occupational therapy. So what's the difference?
Right. I'll go super, super broad. So I don't want my OT friends to kill me because I work hand in hand with lots of OTs and I love them. What we do, I would say OT and physio overlaps a lot at the younger ages. When we talk about babies, who's having trouble rolling can possibly see an OT, possibly see a PT. There is quite a bit of overlap there. Where we do start to diverge, and I would say the easiest, painting a very broad brushstroke over it, would say, think physio, think gross motor. So big body movements, running, jumping, skipping, hopping. Think OT, think fine motor, handwriting, buttoning up your shirt, those feeding skills, the things that require the more of the fine movement. Now, again, that's not to say that an OT can't work on the gross motor skills and that a PT can't work on some hand strengthening and fine motor skills. But that is sort of the very broad separation. And I think it also has to do with the approach that we take. So for example, you know, if you have a child who is having trouble learning how to jump, a physiotherapist will really more so dissect the ability, the strength that's involved in the different muscle components. Does the child have the appropriate range of motion, the appropriate strength, the appropriate motor plan? Whereas like the OT might come at it from more of the stemming from the motor plan and then some in terms of, can they understand how to, are they a visual learner? Are they a physical learner? How do they need to break down the skill in order to learn it? So we intersect a lot. We just approach it from two different angles. I would also say my OT friends have taught me a lot about sensory needs and involvement of the body. And they tend to do a lot more of that sensory integration piece. I definitely can put on my OT hat and help out in those areas, especially when it comes to the vestibular system, proprioception, which is body awareness and knowing where our body is in space. But they would tend to be more of the pros when it comes to that aspect, whereas we would be more of the pros when it comes to focusing on balance, coordination, strength.
So if I think about my neurodiverse families who might be listening to today's podcast, and I think of kids who are autistic, who maybe have Down syndrome, who, you know, maybe have other neurological differences, what is the work that you would do with those families to support the child? And I know that part of your clinic is kind of pulling the whole family in and kind of understanding what's happening, but talk to me a little bit about like, what does it look like to come into your clinic and work with a kiddo who, you know, is kind of maybe because there's some Down syndrome, maybe there's some like core stuff that maybe isn't working great. Like, absolutely. I don't know. Give me some examples of like why families would come to you in that those cases.
So, I mean, any child who comes to physiotherapy, we always start obviously with an assessment and sort of looking at where they're at in their skills and where they can show improvement or where they can catch up to miss to their age match peers. Because there's a lot that goes on, you know, especially when you talk about the school setting and you talk about interacting with other children, where playing is a child's act of daily living. And so being able to navigate a busy playground at school, sit up at your desk in the classroom so you can focus and attend, being involved, being picked for soccer with your friends. Those are all, you know, we talk about acts of daily living, like, or a child's occupation. Those are what they are. And so we always start with an assessment to sort of see where are you at, not just from a physical standpoint, but along with that, where is that making you fall in terms of your peers? And how is that affecting your confidence? How is that affecting your ability to interact with your friends on a social, emotional level as well? So we do very holistically look at the child and their family when they come in, but we would obviously start with an assessment and break down, okay, which skills is it? Are you having trouble learning? Are you not jumping? Are you not running? Are you not kicking a ball, playing catch? You know, we have norms just the same way that, you know, any reading levels that you would have at school or writing levels. Like, we know at what age a child should be able to catch a ball in one hand instead of two hands. I know how many seconds you should be able to stand on one foot for when you reach a certain age. And so looking at those barometers and those little check marks of what you should have at your age, and then seeing where the child is at relative to those skills, how does not having some of those skills affect the day-to-day life? Because, you know, it can be one of those things. Okay, well, your child can't stand on one foot for 10 seconds. Big whoop. What does it matter? Well, it matters for, are they in a busy classroom? And so they may not have the balance reactions that they need if a kid whips by them as they're trying to sit and read a book. Or maybe they want to go play on the playground, but they can't balance enough to hold themselves on one of the structures. So we sort of see how the skills they may or may not be lacking might affect that. And then when we look at the skills that they may or may not be lacking, we can see, is it a core strength issue? Is it a motor planning issue? Is it they just don't know how physically to put their hands out to catch a ball? So do we have to coach them in that sense? And then really working with the family to determine what their goals are. So is your goal that your child is able to play soccer with the rest of the kids at recess? Is that what your child wants to do? Or is it just that your goal that they're able to sit in class for a half an hour at their desk and not slump over and need to put their head down because it's too tiring for their muscles? So I think you know, every child is different. Everybody comes from a different starting place, and whether they've got a neurodiversity or they've got a physical complication that, you know, let's say low muscle tone or high muscle tone, we see, you know, the variety of it, or if they've, you know, just sustained an injury that they're not rehabbing well from, we sort of see where they're at and then meet them at that place and break down the skills and build from there. But really coming at it through the lens of, so what? Like, what does this get us in the long run?
Yeah. And I think that with so many families who have neurodiverse kids, and whether it's a physical neurodiversity or whether it's, you know, something connected with the brain that makes them different, it really just is, what is it that I want my kid to be able to do or my child to be able to do that they can't now? And how can I support that? Right. So it's that whole idea of, you're right, every goal, every step is going to be different depending on the family. You talked about something called motor planning. What is that?
Yeah, it's a great question. So it's something that you and I would think is very straightforward. You know, I ask you to reach your hand, go pick up your water glass. So you reach your hand out straight in front of you, you pick up your water glass, your eyes see the water glass, your eyes and your arm connect to know how far you need to reach your arm out, how much strength your hand needs to go lift it up, and how much range of motion you need to bring it back. It's very intuitive as a high functioning adult. But for a child who has difficulty with motor planning, that planning out that motor movement is very challenging for them. So they might overshoot and stretch their arm out too far. Mm-hmm. They might undershoot and not go enough. They might grab it as if it's 10 pounds and then go to lift it up and the water glass shoots up high in the air, right? Or vice versa, they might not have enough power in their hand to lift it up. So that's an example with lifting just even a water glass, but you can imagine that the motor planning that it would take to jump. Okay, so what do we do when we jump? We have to lift our bodies up against gravity and then rise up in the air and then land. So if we break down that skill, we have to bend our knees, go 2 feet together at the same time, propel ourselves upwards, accept the landing with both of our feet at the same time, absorbing that into our knees, into our feet, and not collapse and not sitting all the way down, right? Like when you jump down, you don't jump and sit on the floor, you jump and you land on your feet. It's a lot of things that we would take for granted as adults that we don't necessarily realize requires a lot of learning, that for a child who is otherwise typically developing, you might not even think twice. But for a child who is neurodiverse or a child who has any physical limitations, it's a lot harder for them to learn how to do those skills. So I always sort of, my hack that I say to my parents, especially when I'm working with babies, let's say, for example, because that's an easy way to describe it. I say, get down on the floor. Pretend you are your baby. Let's say my baby doesn't go from lying on their belly to sitting. I'm like, okay, lie down on your belly and get into sitting and go super slow motion. And you're going to see that it actually requires, okay, you got to push up onto your hands. That takes a lot of shoulder strength. That takes a lot of hand strength. Okay, then you have to squeeze your tummy muscles and actually bring your knees underneath your hips. So now you're in hands and knees position. That's a tough position to be in. And now you got to walk your hands backwards and come into a sitting position and rotate your hips. And now you're moving through a rotational plane. So I'm giving this as an example, but really you can do it with any gross motor skill, whether it's, you know, kicking a ball, catching a ball, running through the playground. When you break down that skill, there's actually tons of little micro skills within it that if you don't have the fundamental ability to learn and understand how to put those all together and how to process that, that's where we work on motor planning. And so you can imagine, especially I can imagine the population of a lot of the kids that you work with who are neurodiverse or, you know, have autism or have any other sort of genetic diagnosis. Think of the differences in the ways that they need to learn for their writing, for their reading, math. There's going to be differences in the way that they need to learn these physical skills. Are they a visual learner? Are they an auditory learner? How do they need more modeling? Do they need you to break it down more? Coming back again to what I said in the beginning with that physical literacy, it's that motor planning and figuring out the way the child learns how their body works.
Well, it's even the ADHDers, right? Like I was thinking of your water glass example, like the impulsivity of just wanting to go get the glass. But if they don't think through the consequences of going too fast or too slow or lifting too, like, you know, all of that stuff. And one of my one of my kiddos isn't very good with perception of depth. And so we have a set of stairs at our cottage that took him a really long time to figure out, because it's four stairs and then there's a long run and then it's another four stairs and a long run. And he would get to the top of the fourth stair and you were almost like, okay, well, you're at the top now. But he thought there was another stair coming because of the angle of things, right? He just couldn't visualize how it all worked. Anyway, that's true.
But that's exactly it. Yeah, that's 100% it. And that's, I know we see a lot of kids with those attention challenges as well. And I think, you know, part of it, our job too, is to dissect is why is your child having a tough time with doing the stairs? Let's say, for example, especially going down the stairs, because going down the stairs is a tough one and it's also a safety hazard. So is your child having a tough time going down the stairs because, you know, the muscle strength that involves, because going down the stairs is essentially, if you, again, go super slow, it's like doing a single leg squat. Each time you step down on the stair, it's like doing a single leg squat. So is it that motor, that muscle control that's tough? Or is it the motor planning, understanding that one foot goes and the other foot goes? Or is it focus and attention? Because you could be physically strong enough, but if you are looking all over the place and not looking where you're going and not focusing to the task at hand, then you're more likely to fall. And so when we navigate those challenges and we, again, break down where is the barrier and then how do we best support that barrier? So I do actually work a lot with my OT friends for some of those kids who have that sensory processing challenge, because that's where they're going to be the experts and come in and say, okay, you know, they need to be doing X, Y, and Z while they're doing the stairs in order to be able to organize their sensory system enough to focus on the task at hand. So we do definitely overlap a lot, but physio comes into play at that point to sort of take over when it comes to the, okay, what does the muscle need to do?
Yeah. When should parents, families, guardians, whoever it is, even school systems really, because even I was thinking back to my own like special education kind of meetings that we sit in, and we always talk about bringing in OT, but it's occurring to me as we're having this conversation, we always say, oh, we'll call in OT PT, but I don't know that I've ever had. And for those people who don't know, OT is short for occupational therapy and PT is short for physical therapy. We should, you know, I think we throw out those acronyms so often in our lingo, because we do it and we forget that people don't always know what it means, but I don't know that I've ever had PT, so physical therapy, come in and work with kids. I know I've had OT for sure. So I'm in my mind, I'm like, oh, when we make those referrals, do we ask for one? Do we ask? Now I can't remember what we do.
Well, so that's a great question. And this sort of comes back to what I call the luxury of being a private therapist. So keep in mind, I am a private therapist. So I could have a whole other podcast on my navigation of the public system versus the private system and why I opened up a physiotherapy clinic in the first place. I did actually, at one point in my many lives, consult at a school through a contract that was, at the time, our Community Care Access System, CCAC. And I would go to the schools. But really, when it comes to the public school system, it's quite tough to get the supports that you need. Physio in the school system is typically called in when it comes to navigating the classroom safely from a physical standpoint. So if you need a walker, if you need cane, if you would need any adaptations in the classroom to support you physically. The other times it would come in is sometimes I would get referrals from, let's say, the gym teacher saying this kid just can't keep up in phys ed. And so what can I do to modify the activities in phys ed to fit them? So I'll get those sometimes too. I would say more often than not, it is more OT that gets consulted in the school system for sure. And that just tends to be because they can wear more hats, right? So it's like, oh, the OT's here to help with the focus and attention and the sensory. While you're at it, can you throw in some handwriting?
Right.
So they tend to be a little bit more more resourceful when it comes to the schools, whereas physios are sort of just seeing, oh, okay, well, what does it matter if they're not playing in the playground, as long as they're able to do all the other things? So that's the other factor that I think people underestimate, how valuable being physically literate, being strong and capable and confident carries over into a child's day-to-day life. And so you think about school, you think about the reading and the writing and focusing in the classroom, it's definitely going to be more OT and that's sort of meeting the needs of at school. But recess is a part of school and participating in gym class is still a part of school. So I definitely agree with you that our referrals are sort of way less frequent, unless you're talking about a child who needs equipment or in that sort of respect. But when it comes to the kiddos who are otherwise navigating their environments safe enough, participating well enough, that sort of next level is not typically addressed in the public system, which is why I thrive at it in the private system when I can, because there is so much more that can be done than what our system unfortunately allows for.
Interesting. It's just making me think as we sit in those meetings, right, that I might now start saying, well, maybe we need to go more like OT, absolutely, but maybe we need to bring in the PT even just for my own self.
Yeah. Or even just like for the, like the core strengthening piece, let's say, for example, okay, great. You want this kid to focus and attend more in the classroom. So the OT is going to come in and possibly recommend one of those wiggle seats, you know, physio could do that too, but like, could I pull the kid out of class for 10 minutes and get him to do like 10 sit-ups and 10 push-ups that are modified, obviously, and get him to be like, get that, those movement breaks in. So for those kiddos who, you know, there's a whole other subset we didn't chat about yet, but for the kiddos who need movement breaks, OT can definitely do it, but physio can do it too. And physio might come at it with a different lens of, hey, you know what, I'm going to prime this muscle and this muscle and this muscle, because I know that they're sitting at a desk. And when you sit at a desk, you actually need this, this, and this. So what does that bring to the table, and how does that carry over to their ability to sustain a lesson plan? Because there might be something to say for having a little, you know, we always say physiotherapy, PT, personal trainer, PT. There's a little bit of overlap there for sure, that a little bit of a burst can go a long way when it comes to having that ability to sustain focus and attention through a lesson in the classroom.
When should parents start looking at or considering going to a physical therapist? Like, what are the milestones, or what are the key markers or indications that like, yeah, we could do occupational therapy, but maybe we need to start with, or maybe we need to go to, right? So what are the markers that indicate that PT would maybe be the right way to go?
I think if any time that you're seeing a challenge with balance and coordination, definitely physio is the way to go. And I mean, like I said before, we work hand in hand with OT, and we are also experts at being able to say, you know what, we did this assessment, I actually think that you need OT. So like, we'll be the first people to say that we're not the right place if you've come to us first. So that's not a problem. But for sure, balance and coordination. If you see increased tripping and falling, so you know, you go for a walk with your child and you're like, oh, they tripped like 3 times on that walk. What did they trip over, their own 2 feet, or what are the rock that they didn't see in their way? So increased trips and falls for sure. Lack of endurance is another thing that we tend to work on, especially with a lot of our kiddos who are neurodiverse, because it tends to come with a little bit of decreased core, low muscle tone. And so if you have your after dinner walk around the block and okay, fine, they didn't trip and fall, but by like they ask to take lots of breaks when they're walking, or you know that, oh, there's no way I got to go run these 3 errands, but there's no way Johnny could join me because he can't walk around the mall. How old is Johnny? Should he be able to walk around the mall? Probably. If you were noticing that I would love to register my child for soccer in the community, but there's no way they can keep up with the other kids their age. I've seen them run around. There's no way. Or you bring them to the playground, even at a very young age, 4, 5, 6, and they stand off to the side. They don't want to be involved. They don't want to go run and play. Part of that like is playground confidence, which is a whole other subset that we work on, because playgrounds can be big and scary and intimidating with other kids who are running around. And, you know, if your kid is self-selecting out of that, that's a huge marker that they could use physio and a confidence boost. Or even if they're not self-selecting out of it, but they go and they're like having a hard time on the stairs, or if they're, you know, they go to go down the slide, but they lie down all the way on their back because they can't sustain a sit, because their tummy muscles aren't strong enough. Or, you know, your child is getting to an age where you're like, huh, I think they should be switching their feet on the stairs. They still go 1 foot at a time, but they're 5 now, they're 6 now. They should probably be switching their feet. And that's another reason to definitely seek out physio. And I think that the nice thing about physio, again, another sort of glitch in the system, I'll say, when it comes to private therapy too, is we are often covered, whereas OT is not. So I actually often get kiddos coming to us first, and the parents say, I don't know if my child needs physio or OT, but physio was the one that was covered by my private insurance, by my extended healthcare benefits. So I'm here first, and then we go from there, and we see what we can provide from a physio standpoint, obviously to help the family maximize the supports they have, and we'll make referrals as needed. But I actually often get the kiddos here first because of that reason.
So you've used the term low muscle tone a couple times, and I think I know what it is, but can you talk to us about what low muscle tone is, and how is a parent to know if their child does? And I'm saying this because in my experience, children who struggle to write, to your point, you've brought up a bunch of times, sit up straight, sit at the carpet. Like that's the hardest one for most kids, to sit at the carpet. It's, you know, you'll find them rolling around, but it's because sitting up is physically difficult. And a lot of our kids with sensory issues, that whole idea of sitting up and those things are struggling. So talk to me about what low muscle tone is and why we as parents, we as educators need to pay attention to those kids who have that low muscle tone.
Great question. So I use a couple analogies when I talk about low muscle tone, because it's a little bit of a, it's a physiological term and a medical term. And what it basically means is that your muscles take a little bit longer to contract than average. And so we talk about low muscle tone, we talk about high muscle tone, and we call them in between what's within normal limits. And there are some kids who are within the normal limits, but more to the lower side, within the normal limits, but more to the higher side. But the best sort of analogy that I can give is a hair elastic. So think of your drawer of hair elastics. You know that you've got a couple in your drawer that you need to do three times around to make a tight ponytail. You've got a couple in your drawer that you know you need to do only two times around to make a tight ponytail, right? So it's that tension, that's that resting tension that's in the elastic. Now, will you get a great ponytail out of each hair elastic? Probably, yeah. Each are gonna give you that ponytail, but one needs to work a little harder to get there. One needs to go around three times, one only needs to go around twice. And if you've got a really tight one, it only needs to go around once, depending on the type of hair day you're having. But that's one analogy. Another analogy that I use is a dimmer switch. So you have the lights in the room are on a dimmer switch. Now you can have your lights sitting just below that threshold to be on, and they only take a little tap and they go on. But then you have some lights that sit, that if your dimmer bar is all the way at the bottom, if your dimmer bar is all the way at the bottom, you got to push all the way up to get the lights to come on. The lights come on in both scenarios, but you have to gauge how much to push. So a child with low muscle tone is that three times around hair elastic. They need to work a little harder to get their contractions going to get that ponytail. Their dimmer switch is sitting low down. They got to really fire up to get there. A child with high muscle tone is that one time around elastic. So I'm talking about, you know, they're super tight. They don't got to work hard, but they have to work hard to not overfire and stiffen, right? So they're that dimmer switch that's sitting just below threshold. You don't want the lights to come on too bright, so you got to make sure you just do it a little bit. So there's not one that's better than the other, right? You know, that's sort of just the two ends of the spectrum and the ways to sort of understand how our muscle tone works. And then within that, we can, you don't really change your resting muscle tone, but you can change the way your body responds to it. So the kiddos who are lower muscle tone, they tend to have a softer presentation. Like you go to shake their hand and it kind of feels a little noodly. It kind of feels a little soft. Like it's soft is the best word that I can use. I don't like to use the word floppy. Some people use the word floppy. I don't like that word. I like to say softer. Their muscles are more just generally relaxed versus the kids who are at high tension and are raring to go. Those kids might be able to get all the skills super quick and be look super strong, but their muscles can also tighten very easily and they can have decreased flexibility. Our kiddos with low tone are always sort of super flexible. So that's sort of the difference between low tone and high tone. And coming back to what I said about, you know, we can't really change the resting tone because that's just sort of the way you're built, but you can change the strength that's there so that when the signals do get there, you're raring to go and you're ready to fire. So a kiddo with lower tone who's sitting at the desk at school, more relaxed posture, a little bit slumps more into their desk, they need to get a little bit more strengthening in because in order to maintain that proper sitting posture, it's going to take a bit more work. If I could use another analogy, I'll say, you know, you're at the gym and you want to get to strength X. And so you need to do how many sit-ups? Okay, well, you're working towards this strength X. A kiddo with low muscle tone might have to do 10 sit-ups. The kiddo with high muscle tone will have to do 6 sit-ups and the kiddo just in the middle in between has to do 8, right? So it's just how much more work is involved to getting to that finish line.
I think with all of this, when it comes to looking at our kids, it's just every kid is going to be different and there isn't a right or wrong way to be. But I think there are little things we can do and little things that you support in the PT environment that support the child to just, I don't want to use the word more confident because that's not it, but to be able to be more successful with less work. And that's what so much of this is, right? Yeah. Is like, how can we help the child read so that it's less hard? How can we help the child right so that it's less hard? How can we help the child play soccer or so climb the stairs or roll over or sit up at a desk without it being so much work? Because being a kid is a lot of work.
100%. I always say my tagline is that babies are energy efficient, and that applies to kids as well throughout their whole childhood. Because, you know, if you think about a baby and how much work they're doing throughout their whole first year, think of the growth at a cellular level of how, like, there's those cells are firing, those neurons are firing, they're proliferating, they're developing. We don't grow as much from 35 to 36, 40 to 41 as we do from 0 to 1 or from 4 to 5. You know, it's that time of year right now where everybody's posting their like beginning of grade one, end of grade one photos, and oh my God, look at how much they've grown. So think about how much energy that actually takes from the body. Subconscious, we don't realize it, but that takes energy to grow, right? You know, kids go through growth spurts, they eat a lot, they sleep a lot, whatever it may be. So why would they do something hard? I always say a baby that is learning to walk will never walk independently until walking becomes more efficient than crawling. Because they're like, if I can get from point A to point B by doing less work and I get there faster, why would I do that? Why would I walk when I can crawl? And so until we make walking easier than crawling, they're not going to choose walking. So until we make sitting up at a desk easier than slumping down, until we make playing soccer at recess with your friends easier and more fun than hanging out and leaning up your body back against the brick wall of the school, because, hey, I got a wall that can support me, why would I go run? Until we make those things easier and more accessible to them, they're not going to choose it. And then we get to this age where it becomes cyclical, because the more they don't do it, the harder it gets, and the harder it gets, the more they don't do it. And that's why, you know, just like anything, early intervention is key, and setting up a good foundation of gross motor confidence and physical skill confidence, again, physical literacy. I do like to use the word confidence, because even though it's not necessarily that, it's not making it easier, I think that yes, we are making it easier, but kids need to feel good about themselves, right? They need to feel successful. And if there are things that are hard for them, if reading is hard for them, if writing is hard for them, if being at school is hard for them, then wouldn't it be, and they're working at it, and you know, that with the supports in place, which is great, but wouldn't it be nice if they had one part of their day that like felt, that made them feel really good? Like, yeah, okay, I know I have my help in this, this, and this, but I got to and go on the playground today, and I went out down the big slide, and that made me feel really good. And if going down the big slide gives them confidence, then or makes them feel good about themselves, so they have the confidence to go on the big slide, because we've done some core work in physio, gives them the confidence to go on the big slide. They go on the big slide. They feel like a rock star. That kid going back into the classroom after that recess has a different attitude than the kid who stood against the brick wall the entire time.
Yep, for sure. And that's what it is, right? It's just about building their skill set so that they can feel more like their peers, especially when they get to that age where they know that they're a little different. And that does start to hit around 8 or 9. They start to see the differences. And so it's just so important we can give those kiddos a leg up. If you got any resources that parents can maybe explore, check out in regards to physical therapy and how they can support their kids.
Yeah. So I mean, we're big on our social media page. That's like my first easiest go-to, Sam. So we have our own Instagram, which is at Toronto Kids Physio. Super easy to remember. We are also Toronto Kids Physio as a franchise of Kids Physio Group as a whole. And so we have tons of locations actually across the country. We've got a bunch of locations in BC. We've got one in Halifax, Hamilton. And so all that being said is that each clinic has their own physio page as well. So if you head on over and follow at Kids Physio, they'll direct you also to all the other Kids Physio clinics. And each one of us, we post great gross motor tips. If you need to go back in ours, over the coast when it was COVID and it was locked down and we were closed, we did a whole series on all the different activities you could do with your kids at home, which is a great resource to go back to. And it's saved in our story highlights. Or even if you just go back further in our page and all of our reels of little at-home obstacle courses that you can make. So that's a great resource, because I find there's lots of different things that you can pull, different age groups, different needs of the kiddos. So Instagram is a great place to go to. There's also canchild.org, which is out of McMaster Hospital. They've got, it's the Canadian resource for all things developmental coordination, the things that happen with kiddos. And so it's tanchild.ca, and they've got all the different types of motor milestones that are sort of listed there. We have some in our resource pages as well. But those are usually my two big ones. And the third one is pathways.org. Mm-hmm. If your kiddo is a little bit younger, that's another one. Pathways is a motor milestone, sort of like baby to toddlerhood. Up until about 6 years old, they walk you through all the different motor milestones. And then you can sort of have a baseline of where you think your kiddo should be at. And then the best thing I say is to just come in for an assessment or reach out to a physio, because again, as you mentioned earlier, every child is different. So I like these resources as a way to sort of say, okay, where should they be at? But it also, it's like, take it with a grain of salt, because every kid is different. They learn differently. And so I'm always hesitant to talk about, you know, specific milestones. I always say, you know, 4 to 6 months-ish, 3 to 4 year olds-ish, because everybody's coming with a different skill set. And so it's best to get it tailored to your child specifically. But at the same time, if you want to get a rough idea, that's where you can find it. And then, yeah, I'm a big fan of our own Instagram page for fun activity ideas.
I know you just said it, but I want to make sure that everybody gets it. So let us know where we can find out more about you and your clinic and what you do.
Yes. So we are Toronto Kids Physio. Here in Toronto, we have two physical locations. One is at Yonge and Lawrence, and one is in Leaside, near Eglinton and Laird. And we are just physio, just kids doing physiotherapy clinics. We're open 7 days a week. You can head on over to kidsphysio.ca/Toronto. And that will give you the information on both of the clinic locations, as well as our email addresses and phone numbers. But it's pretty easy, because it's toronto@kidsphysio.ca is the best email address to reach us at. And then @Toronto Kids Physio is our Instagram. It's a pretty good Googleable name, which is great. And as I mentioned, if you're listening from anywhere else outside of the GTA, there are locations that are in BC, in Hamilton, Halifax. We have a friend opening up in Oakville quite soon. So we are growing all the time. I have big dreams too, so you can keep an eye on that. But so far, the two locations in the GTA are Leaside and Yonge and Lawrence. And we do also offer virtual therapy still. That was one of the lemonade to come out of the lemon of COVID, is that we became really skilled at virtual therapy and engaging kiddos virtually. So as long as you're in Ontario, for ourselves specifically, because our College of Physiotherapists restricts us to operating obviously within our own provincial territory. So if you are in Ontario and want a virtual consult or want to start some virtual sessions where we can engage in that way, you can be from anywhere in Ontario and I'd be happy to work with you.
That's perfect. Jennifer, thank you so much for this. I've kind of gleaned a bit more of a light into physiotherapy and kind of start to maybe engage them more often in my school. So thank you so much.
Amazing. Thank you so much for having me. This was great.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you are looking for help and support in creating a roadmap to success for your child through challenging times, contact me at access2education.com. I work with all families to help them build power and knowledge in understanding their child's needs and how to build success through advocacy. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram at Access to Education Toronto. Make sure to subscribe to this podcast so together we can create your roadmap to success.